Chapter 37. The Feet of Friends and the Power of Steam. Limehouse did not seem so menacing in the light of day. It bustled with dock life, and there was even the consoling sight of a policeman ambling through a group of black sailors, who, to judge from their reeling gaits, had not long been on dry land, and, from the way they swayed along in straight lines, had not yet visited a bar. Jerry Dawson guided Meg up a street, leading away from the water, and we negotiated a series of sunlit alleys, barely recognisable as those we had edged along at night.
"Here we are."
We stopped by the loading bay. Five urchins tumbled through a doorway across the court. I gave them a penny each, and they loitered nearby, watching us curiously.
"Lost your nose bag, missus?"
One called to his friend's hilarity, making me very glad indeed that I had been kind to them, especially as I could not be so cruel as to mock their wretched appearances. Every one of them had the bow legs and bulging brows of rickets.
"Shove off!"
Jerry waved a threatening fist, and they backed a pace or so, but did not scatter.
"The little rascals,"
my guardian said, with a benevolence that he reserved almost exclusively for people who were rude to me. The bay was no more than a tumble-down, rotting wooden shelter, attached by one long side and one short to a crumbled brick wall. The other corner, once supported by a post, which was now snapped and hanging loose, so that the roof sagged from about 8 feet high at the wall to 3 feet at the unfixed corner. Old soiled straw on the cobbles indicated that a pony or donkey must have been housed there sometimes.
"Well, he ain't here now,"
Jerry observed.
"If only I had an opening for another assistant," Mr. G muttered, "I could reject you for it without an interview." "Not so pretty as your present one," Jerry said, more gallantly than truthfully. "Miss Middleton's unfortunate appearance is none of your concern," my guardian scolded.
The ground was trampled with a jumble of boot prints and hoof marks.
"I suppose it is too much to hope you are capable of recognizing your friend's impressions."
Mr. G ran the ferrule of his stick round the smudged outline of a heel. "Would you recognize yours?" I challenged.
"If I ever had a friend, I most certainly would." "Wouldn't recognize my own in all that mess," Jerry contributed.
And Mr. G dropped his eye into his hand and straight into his waistcoat.
"Yet another reason why I shall not be offering you the imaginary position."
He raked about in the straw with the ferrule of his cane, uncovering nothing other than more muck.
"If you were to kneel and sift through it with your fingers, Miss Middleton..."
"Perhaps you would like to show me what you mean," I broke in, but neither of us seemed inclined to follow the other's suggestion. Sidney Grice leaned in as far as he could and puddled his stick around.
"Found anything?"
Jerry asked over my shoulder.
"I have found almost innumerable things," Mr. G answered testily, "most of them being the end products of equine digestive processes, though at least 2 canine and 4 feline visitors have made generous contributions, not to mention a difficult-to-ascertain number of mus musculus."
"Oh?" Jerry queried. "Mice," I translated.
"And ratus norvegetus visitors." "I can guess that one." "And,"
Mr. G's voice rose indignantly,
"the young of a species unworthy of classification as Homo sapiens, indeed scarcely describable as Homo."
If the children knew that he was disparaging them, they showed no sign of it, merely calling out helpful suggestions to my godfather not to slip, along with a toothless boy's insistence that any tin dropped in there must have been his. Sidney Grice pulled his head out and straightened up.
"Got a rag, Miss Middleton?"
The filth began to steam and, in places, bubble, slurping and popping with his vigorous stirring. "I have this."
"It will have to do."
He wiped his cane clean on my pink silk handkerchief.
"Want it back?"
"No." He dropped it in the gutter and leaned in sideways to scrutinize the brick wall to his side.
Humph,
he said, or words to that effect, before repeating the sounds backwards.
"Aha."
He took hold of the corner and leaned in sideways.
"Interesting."
He re-emerged.
"Possibly." and fiddled with the handle of his cane. "Is that the cane with your clockwork fingers?" I asked. They had not been a great success at picking up biscuits.
"A similar but manual device."
Mr. G pressed a button, the ferrule retracting to expose two flattened prongs which, when he twisted the handle, closed together like miniature fingers, hinging apart with a counter-twist.
"Excellent,"
he grunted, and reached in and upwards to something just under the roof.
"Steady,"
he instructed himself,
"and got you."
He emerged triumphantly with what looked like a piece of fur in the grip of his prongs.
"What colour would you say Lieutenant Peter Lewis James Hockaday's hair was, or, to cut to the chase, would you say it matched this?"
I looked over and saw a clump of yellow hairs. "Very similar," I said with a sinking feeling. "Oh, dear Lord." As Sidney Grice rotated his find, I saw that attached to the underside was an area, about the size of a postage stamp, of scalp.
"Looks like he had his head banged good and hard on the wall,"
Jerry contributed.
"If we could find a board, I can get a proper look without soiling my boots,"
Sidney Grice mused.
"It is quite dark in there, but I am fairly certain that there are another three pieces, and lower down,"
he indicated with his stick,
"are 26 stains, 6 of which bear 7 striking resemblances to blood." "A violent struggle,"
Jerry pronounced gravely.
"I appear to have a new professional rival."
My guardian dropped his sample into a wide test tube.
"Threepence to the boy who brings us a wide plank,"
I called across the court, and there was an immediate stampede.
"And a free night in Commercial Road Police Station if I discover that it is stolen,"
Sidney Grice called after them.
"Well, they ain't going to go to the plank shop and buy one,"
Jerry Dawson snorted.
"No, but they might be able to borrow one from a carpenter,"
I said hopefully.
"Here, you come back with that, you little bladers,"
a woman shrieked over the clatter of clogs, returning at full pelt.